Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And hi, my name's Kim. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. And yeah, it's wonderful to be asked to do this foundation meeting. It's wonderful to be here with everyone. There's PPG Webster is my home group, and finding this meeting and all the wonderful people who are a part of it. I'm really grateful to my sponsor who's on this call for kind of directing me towards these meetings. And as part of these meetings, we study the book line by line. It's been really helpful to me. I joined this kind of group when I was 9 years sober, but what I realized is I needed to keep studying this book, keep growing in understanding, and so that I could keep being helpful and keep being more helpful. So, it's been incredibly transformative for my recovery, and has enabled me to keep carrying the message to other alcoholics. And and one of my sponsors is on this call too. And I'm so grateful to the people who've given me the opportunity to be of service. It's just the most wonderful thing. And I got sober in January the 24th, 2014, and I say that because God, to be 10 years sober is, I mean, is nothing short of a miracle. I couldn't get 10 minutes sober at the end of my drinking. So, and that is only because I had this message carried to me, and I was shown how to access this solution and how to keep that going in my life over the last 10 years, a day at a time. So just to kind of start with, the purpose of a foundation meeting, and a foundation, like solid ground to base our recovery on. And the main things we're going to cover are like what is the problem? What is it that we alcoholics suffer from? And by the time I made it to an AA meeting, I was pretty aware there was lots of problems, and I was pretty aware that my drinking was a problem. I had carried on drinking long past the point of it being pleasurable, long past being the point of something that I wanted to do, but I didn't know what the problem was. And so both me and my poor family, friends, partner, like had no success in improving it. It didn't matter how hard I tried, like, and I was trying towards the end, but it didn't matter. My drinking got worse, how I felt got worse, and my life got worse. And so the second, really important thing is, what is the solution? I need to know what my problem is, but I need to know what my solution is. And I feel really lucky actually that the first meeting I went to, drunk as I was, the power of a room full of alcoholics, was able to kind of penetrate those five bottles of wine I'd had and impress upon me that I was the same as them. Like, and I did take that from that first meeting. I had no resistance to the fact that I was an alcoholic. But that wasn't enough. I was too drunk to hear what they were trying to tell me about the solution. I was too drunk to do any of the suggested things. And so, like, knowing that I was an alcoholic, I drank on knowing that I was an alcoholic. I was like, well, I'm an alcoholic. That's what they do, that's it. That is it for me. And I really believed that that was it for me. So it was only when the problem and the solution kind of came together that I started to recover. And I want to start on page 16 at the end of Bill's story. It's a bit of kind of selfish vested interest. It's my favorite line in the whole book. So maybe not like a traditional place to start, but I can still remember how powerful this line was when I was a couple of days sober, sitting like raw and vibrating on my sponsor's sofa. And we read this line that says at the end of the chapter, most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. And so just to like set the scene around that, that simple talk in the kitchen, that was so Bill W., one of AA's co-founders, He had been in hospital a couple of times by this point, and he had been, lucky that in that hospital he was treated by Dr. Silkworth. We're going to read a bit about what Dr. Silkworth had to say in a bit, and so he had knowledge of his problem. He had knowledge of this disease of alcoholism, and he kept drinking. He kept drinking. Like back on page 7, it says, after he left hospital the first time, he was like, thank God I've got this self-knowledge. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it wasn't, and he drank again. And after his next kind of exit from hospital, or while he was in hospital rather, on page 8, it says, like he accepted defeat. He had kind of what we would call a step one moment. Now, it says, I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master, I can't do it anymore, like no resistance. But that didn't, that surrender on its own didn't keep him sober. Even increasing fear of his problem and of drinking again didn't keep him sober. It says on page 8, fear sobered me up for a bit, and then came the insidious insanity of the first drink. So like none of that kind of experience and knowledge of his problem was enough. And shortly after that, his old drinking buddy, Ebby Thatcher, came to visit him. And, and he thought, this is great. We're going to crack open some gin and we're going to chew the fat. And the thing about Ebby was, because Bill knew that Ebby was like him, he knew he drank the same, he knew he was as insane as he was, that when his buddy turned up and was sober, and not just sober, but it says on page 9, like had this starry-eyed look, was on fire. Something was different about him, that suddenly that was quite attractive to Bill. And so Ebby was able to tell him exactly what had happened to him and lay out the solution, this practical program of action, and how he had gone from being this insane, hopeless, powerless alcoholic that couldn't stop drinking into someone who was sober, and not just sober, but looking like he felt all right, like he felt pretty good in his sobriety. And I just, it's the most wonderful thing when, one alcoholic, through the power of identification, can get someone who feels hopeless to experience hope, because they know and they can feel that they are the same. And and Bill says, like on page 11, had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and this was none at all. So Bill knows that Ebby was powerless, and clearly he has got some power. And from the off the back of that, he goes on to take the actions that Ebby had took, and he began to recover. So yeah, I think so if we move kind of back now to, so that is just, yeah, like what a wonderful, miraculous thing, like that widening circle of peace and goodwill. And I think, that word peace like grabbed me from the beginning, because my own, the only sobriety I had ever known was the opposite of peace. Like, so that was not what I thought was going to happen when I put drink down. I knew I can't, like I knew I was going to have to put the drink down at some point, but I didn't see how, because when I put the drink down, it was not peace. It was torture. It was internal warfare, and it wasn't an option to me. All right. So if I kind of just go back to the title page on the inside cover of the book, and I should have said, actually, I'm using the fourth edition. So yeah, that's where those page numbers are coming from. And yeah, sorry if they don't marry up what other people are using. I'll try my best to talk about the chapter and the passage. But on the inside title page, we get the first promise in the big book, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And there is that like hope again. And I mean, I when I came into the rooms, I felt it was just impossible that I would ever recover. And as I said, you know, I drank on the hopelessness of being this alcoholic that I knew I was, with every fiber of my being. You know, but I can kind of now like add my experience to this promise that I haven't had to take a drink for 10 years, and I haven't wanted to take a drink for 10 years. And that's kind of like, that's a big difference for me. You know, I don't want to have a drink anymore. And you know, does that mean that being recovered means I don't have to think about this anymore, that I've been fixed and that I'm on my way? Then, but no, it means I'm recovered as long as I have this solution, active and working in my life. As long as I have this solution, then I don't need a drink. And in that sense, I am recovered. So, you know, what is that solution? Well, right at the bottom of this page is the AA triangle, unity, service, and recovery. And as kind of early as I could hear, you know, as a couple of days sober, I remember being stood on the side of the road in somewhere in Bristol, phoning my sponsor like she'd told me to, and she said, you know, you have an illness of the mind that you have been medicating with alcohol, and you need a new medication, or you're going to go back to your old one. And that medication, that solution, is to stay in the middle of this triangle. Like, do your best in these three areas, and you know, relapse does not need to be a part of your story. And you know, what are these three sides of the triangle? So unity, you know, being in meetings, being around other alcoholics. You know, she said you need to remember who you are and like what illness you have. You need to remember what the solution is. You need to be hearing that solution, and you need to get involved. You know, get a home group, be useful, be part of. You know, don't be isolated on your own, you know, with your head. But that's just one side of the triangle, you know. So like, just meetings on its own is not enough. And that was my experience, you know, the first 6 months for me of being in AA, partly because I was, you know, too drunk to kind of really hear or know any better. I just did meetings, and you know, and I felt good in a meeting. It was so nice, you know, it's great being around other alcoholics. It's, you know, everyone was kind and welcoming, and that kept me coming back. It was really attractive. I'm so grateful to that. But as wonderful as that was to be sat in a meeting, like, I remember thinking, this is great, but what about the other 23 hours in the day? You know, like, what about when I go home with my head? And you know, how on earth is this going to keep me sober, for the rest of the day? And of course, I would go home and drink. It didn't matter how, you know, good the meeting was. Like, it wasn't enough to keep me sober. So Unity was really helpful. It kept me coming back. If I hadn't kept coming back, you know, I wouldn't have heard the right things at the moment that I was like ready to hear them and accept defeat. I wouldn't have found a solution in the end. But you know, the other two sides of the triangle, recovery. This is the solution. This is the program of action that is the 12 steps of AA. This is what is gonna, you know, change my disease thinking and stop me going back to that drink. It's what is gonna make my head a tolerable place to be so that I don't need to drink on it. And service, carrying this message, working with others, being helpful however I can, you know, it has been the only thing really to stop me focusing on all the things that made my head so sick and intolerable. You know, mostly thinking all about me. You know, I wasn't awake, you know, racked with kind of emotional turmoil at 3 in the morning, busy thinking about other people. That's not what I was chewing over. I was chewing over my own stuff, and I need to stop doing that, and I need to focus on others. Yeah, so that's why service is kind of there. I'm just going to skip forward a couple of pages onto the preface, which is X1, so 6 in Roman numerals. And at the start of the second paragraph, where it says, because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, you know, and there's that promise again that this is recovery, you know, not just sobriety, not clinging on, not trying to stay away from the first drink, like recovery that is on offer. And basic text, and you know, and this is something that, you know, I had kind of glossed over. I have always been sponsored by the big book. I have always sponsored by the big book, but it was only when I came, you know, became part of this meeting that I heard people saying, well, if it's a basic text, that means it's a textbook, and there are several things that I need to do with a textbook. I need to be a student and study it. I need to be a practitioner and put that stuff into practice, as well as being a teacher of it, and to keep that solution working as effectively as possible. And I have done all of those things at different points, but there have definitely been points in my recovery where I have maybe done, you know, two or even one out of those three, and have felt it, you know. And if I don't continue to study it, if I don't continue to try and kind of grow in my understanding of it, then, you know, I am back on dodgy ground, because thinking I knew everything and thinking I knew best was what got me drunk and kept getting drunk, you know. And actually, the moment that I got well and started to recover was the moment that actually I accepted I really don't know much at all, and kind of became teachable. So yeah, I'm really grateful to this meeting for keeping me grounded in those three things: studying this book, practicing these principles, so my own personal recovery keeps working for me, and then carrying this message as effectively as possible. And that's also to say that when I first got so, you know, I need a teacher too, you know, ongoing. So I needed a sponsor when I first got in. I need a sponsor now, you know, someone who can keep kind of guiding me through this program of action. And the other thing to point out here is where it says just below that, you know, there exists strong sentiment against any radical changes being made to this basic text. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left untouched in the course of revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions. Now, I mean, that is like, it's that's quite a thing, isn't it? You know, I mean, I've studied when I was still drinking, I've studied in sobriety. I've studied a couple of different subjects. There was loads of textbooks, and even in the space of a 3-year uni course, they were getting updated all the time. Like, new information. Here's a new way of doing things. We've uncovered like more stuff, and it's like, God, I have to keep spending money and updating my learnings. And you know, I've yet to come across anything else where it's like it hasn't changed. You know, since 1939, the first 164 pages, which is this program of action, haven't changed, because it worked and it continues to work so well. And how well has it worked? Well, if we skip forward to the, you know, to the forwards, and in the forward of the first edition on page X111, it tells us that in 1939, when this was published, you know, there were 100 men and women who had recovered. There were two AA groups, and there were members kind of scattered about trying to set up other groups. We skip forward to the next forward, just over the page. In 1955, 16 years later, it's now 150,000 and 6,000 groups. It talks about a wholesale miracle has taken place. I mean, and that is a miracle. And I struggle to put myself in the shoes of those founding members who were carrying this message with this book that they knew they needed to publish to get that message out as far and wide, because they had found something that had worked for them as hopeless alcoholics. You know, Like the only AA I've ever known is an AA where there are meetings everywhere. I'm so lucky, you know, in Bristol there's so many meetings. You know, somewhere in my sobriety, COVID happened and Zoom meetings became everywhere. Like AA is everywhere if I want it. Meetings are everywhere. And they didn't have that, you know. They had these instructions, and they had one alcoholic carrying a message to the other. And somehow in 16 years, you know, it's gone from 100 to 150,000. And if we move forward onto the third edition, on XX11, 1976, 21 years later, it's now at 1 million, and it's now at 28,000 groups. And over the page on the forward to the fourth edition, if you have that edition, 2001, 25 years later, 2 million, 100,800 groups. And you know, that is, it's just incredible. Like that's how well it works. And as it's grown, you know, it continues to work for people of increasingly diverse, you know, nationality and gender and you know, social background and age, lifestyles, and still this one solution has been effective for all of those people. You know, that is how well it works. And before I move on to, you know, kind of getting into the problem, just a couple of other points that they take, you know, great effort to lay out up front in these forewords. Back on the forward to the first edition, where it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body." You know, so they are laying out that problem in really clear language right up front. And to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. You know, precisely, you know, they are giving us specific instructions because that is what worked for them when nothing else had. We skip over the page, into the couple of pages into the forward to the second edition on XV1, and towards the bottom of that page, it introduces, you know, the story of Bill W., one of our co-founders, and his meeting with Dr. Bob, and how Bill had been in relatively, you know, early sobriety, and he'd gone on a business trip, and it had gone tilt. He was on wobbly ground. His head's all over the place, and I, you know, and I can feel what that feels like. Like I have been there, I have drunk on that, and he knew, you know, he was on dodgy ground, and he was fearful that he might start drinking again. And in that moment, you know, he didn't pick up the phone to Ebby, who was, I guess, you know, what we would call his sponsor at the time. He picked up the phone to be of service, to find another alcoholic to carry the message to. Like it wasn't a human power who helped him in that moment. It was, you know, being of service and carrying the message to another alcoholic. And over on the you know, on the next page, at the top of the next page, it says it also indicated that strenuous work with one alcoholic with another was vital to permanent recovery. So our primary purpose is laid out up front. And these two guys, Bill and Bob, set to work almost frantically upon carrying this message to other alcoholics. Okay. So let's you know, why are we studying this book, and how is this book going to help us? If I just like skip forward a little bit to page 45. where it tells us really clearly, you know, what the main object of this book is and how this book can help us. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which can solve your problem. And, you know, that tells me, you know, what I'm going to get from this process, like why I need this book, why I need the program of action that it details. And also, again, like gives great hope, you know, if you are out of ideas, if you have tried everything, if you are feeling powerless, if you have no solution, then that might seem hopeless, but this is saying that you are in the right place. So what does being powerless mean? You know, what is this illness that we are powerless over? There's a few things, first of all, that it isn't. You know, it's not a question of willpower. If I have a look at page 31. And on the like third paragraph, or the second kind of full paragraph, you know, it says, here are some of the methods we have tried. And, you know, by the time I kind of came to AA, I mean, I only came to AA because I had tried everything. I had tried, you know, most, if not all of these methods. You know, drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, never having it in the house, you know, never drinking during business hours. You know, it lists so many different examples, you know, and I had tried all of that. I had tried, you know, I thought if I go to the gym at 6 a.m. every morning, then maybe, you know, it will set me up all right and I won't need to drink. If I, you know, read books with kind of crazy detox diets, then you know, and I had enough willpower to do those crazy diets, and they took quite a lot of willpower. Some of them were god awful, really expensive. I could stick to those diets, but it didn't, it, you know, all I did was go on a massive binge as soon as they were done. You know, it didn't keep me sober, it didn't solve my problem. My poor partner, who was with me at the end of my drinking, you know, he tried giving me 2 glasses of wine a day. I said, I need to stop drinking, and but I can't. And we said, okay, maybe if I just have 2 glasses of wine, that maybe that will be enough. And we tried to do that, only for me to soon figure out that I needed to keep a secret stash upstairs. So, you know, willpower that worked for me in loads of other ways, you know, didn't work and wasn't what this disease was a question of. And if I go to page 20 now, just skip back a little bit to page 20. You know, it's also this problem is also not being a heavy drinker, you know, and this towards the bottom of page 20, it looks at the different types of drinkers. We've got the first one towards the, on the second to last, like little mini paragraph. Moderate drinkers. I don't know many of them. They weren't people that, you know, I really kind of stuck with. I do have a sister who is one, is this textbook moderate drinker. She's very pleased to tell me that she's just given up alcohol at the moment because, you know, she just wasn't feeling that great, and she wanted to focus on work a bit more and, you know, lose a bit of weight, and she's just given up drinking, and she could do that. You know, she could always, you know, drink a little bit, drink. Not drink too much, take it or leave it. And I've no idea how we share the same gene pool, but you know, that is her. She is this moderate drinker. Then we have the hard drinkers, you know, which I confused myself with a lot because I hung around with these people a lot. They were people who felt comfortable to me. You know, they in many ways drank like I did, partied like I did. Some of them are still doing it now, you know, and like hats off to them. I don't know that their doctor will be very happy with them, but like their life hasn't, you know, they are okay with that. It, whatever they're getting from that is still working from them. It hasn't progressed to where it did with me. It hasn't, you know, yeah, it's still kind of fun for them. They're still getting what they need. And some of them aren't. Some of them got married, some of them had kids, some of them, developed health problems that are inevitable, and so they either stopped or moderated, and they were able to do that. And then on the second paragraph of page 21, it says, but what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And so this is where we get into what like an alcoholic is. I don't have control. Further down this paragraph, it talks about, getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. For me, that was on the way to work, despite knowing that that was a terrible idea with every fiber of my being. That is not something at all I thought was good, but that is what happened, because we've not just lost the control, we don't have choice. I don't have choice and I don't have control. And I won't read, much more from this kind of long description of the alcoholic, but other than to say, it details a progressive illness. And we may each reach a different point on that progression, but it gets progressively worse. So what is this problem? What is this problem? If I just go to the doctor's opinion now on, and this was on page XXX. And oh, sorry, XX V111, where we're going to get into the crux of it. And this, the doctor's opinion was written by Dr. Silkworth, who was the doctor who treated Bill W. And he was, at that time, if you were looking for an immense human power in when it comes to a disease of the body, at the time, this was it. He was an immense human medical power when it comes to the disease of the body. And yet he states at the beginning of this chapter that he had come to regard alcoholics like Bill W, like me, as hopeless. This great human power, and he's like, there is nothing that I can do. And he explains what this disease of the body that we suffer from is on the first full paragraph on this page. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcoholic on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And oh God, I mean, reading this paragraph was so, and having it explained to me by a sponsor was just so transformative for me. It was, it was the first step in, kind of grasping why I couldn't get well. And I'd actually, I knew that I had this allergy. My sponsor explained it as an abnormal reaction. When it's in my body, I don't react normally. And I had known really through hard, painful experience that whatever time of the day I start drinking at, like it's probably, I won't finish until I pass out. And actually, this abnormal reaction had been in me long before my drinking had progressed to being regular daily drinking. One of the first times I went out to drink was to go to a gig I'd been looking forward to all year. I think I can only have been about 16. I'd saved up money, all my friends were going, and I thought, I just, I need a couple of drinks just to take the edge off so I can kind of let go and have a good time. And that was all I wanted. I just wanted to have a good time at this gig. I never made it to the gig. I woke up in Leeds Hospital, where my parents had had to come and pick me up at 2 in the morning. Like that craving had kicked in. That craving doesn't care what I want. It overrides all of that. It is, bigger than what I kind of want and think and plan. And yeah, and that is where I ended up. So that allergy, like I really identified with. And this is where I learned that I have no control. But if this is all that alcoholism was, though, I mean, that wouldn't be too problematic. I also have an allergy to gluten. Throughout the course of, my life, I had repeated experiences of this abnormal reaction. It was very painful. It kept happening whenever I consumed anything with gluten, and a doctor told me once, just once, did a doctor need to tell me, you can't have gluten anymore. You have an allergy. You don't react normally, and you will keep experiencing this pain if you keep consuming it. And you know what? Because a medical professional told me that, and because it married up with my experience, not a grain of gluten has passed my lips since. What a miracle. And and that is what the doctor suggests, in terms of our abnormal reaction to alcohol on page XXX. The only relief we have to suggest is total abstinence. So yeah, great, simple. Remove the thing that we have the abnormal reaction to. And I heard alcoholics in AA talking about abstinence, and that sounded horrific to me. With gluten, that was not a problem. With this, it wasn't an option. Why is that? And it's because I also have a disease of the mind. I don't have that around gluten. I really like cakes, I really like pizza, I really like white fluffy bread, but I don't have this disease of the mind. I'm not insane around gluten like I'm insane when it comes to alcohol. And if we go back to that page, XXV 111, where towards the last paragraph, where it says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. This is why, I forget what alcohol does to me. I kid myself about what it's doing for me. I forget. I might make all of these kind of promises that I don't want this pain to keep on happening. But ultimately, I'm going to change my mind, or just not care anymore, or just just being capable of seeing the truth about my drinking, like I could see it so plainly when it came to gluten. And it's going to touch on like the spiritual sickness that we suffer from here again. The reason I'm going to keep going back to it, the reason my mind is going to keep obsessively taking me back to it, is that when I remove alcohol, I feel worse. I feel, it says at the bottom of that page, I feel restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless I can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So that is my problem, and that is what is going to keep taking me back to that first drink, no matter how much pain, no matter how much knowledge, no matter how much I don't, I don't want to be stuck in this cycle. Like I am powerless. I am powerless over that cycle, and over the just the needing that that ease and comfort. And if we move over, it talks a bit more about the disease of the mind over on page 22. Where it really hammers that home, it says down at the bottom of the page, we know that while alcoholics keep away from the drink, as he may do for months and years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. These observations, it continues on the next page, would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And it's like, there we go. I have a body that can't handle alcohol and a mind that needs it. And I am stuck in the middle of that, and I am powerless. And that is it. And And that would be like a terrible, that would be a terrible message to carry, you know, if also we weren't told, well, we can find power, you know. So if we can accept that, you know, if through our kind of bitter experience, if through all of our drinking, if through identifying with another alcoholic who's kind of carrying this message to us, we can identify with this illness of body and mind and go, God, that is what has been happening to me. If that denial is kind of ground out of us through repeated experience, and hearing it in someone else, then we're at step one, which, you know, it says over on page 30, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. Further down, it tells us that, you know, we are in the grip of a progressive illness. This is at the bottom of that paragraph. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. And, you know, do I accept that? Am I kind of done kidding myself about that? And that was not an easy place for me to get to. You know, I have a mind that it says all through these pages around the illness of the mind, like the words illusion and delusion. And, you know, I will keep on kidding myself that this isn't a problem. So desperate am I to cling on to the only solution that I have ever known to that feeling of restless irritability and discontentedness. But if I can get to that point where I go, you know, yes, this is my problem, this is my problem, then I am powerless. And if I am powerless, then I need power. Not human power, you know. Dr. Silkworth, immense power of diseases of the body, he said, this is hopeless. We also get introduced to Dr. Young, who was treating Roland Hazard, who carried the message to Abby Thatcher, who carried the message to Bill. An immense power when it immense human power when it comes to diseases of the mind. And he said the same thing. He said, you know what, this is hopeless. You know, alcoholics of your type, of my type, are hopeless. There's stories that they give us in these chapters around the problem that show that, you know, it doesn't matter how many friends we have, how great our family is, how great our work has, like that doesn't keep us sober. They give us loads of examples. And on page 39, at the end of this chapter, and I love this because I just think they're really speaking. Page 41, 43, sorry. They're really speaking to the alcoholic here. They like, and this is one of those lovely examples of knowing that this book was written by alcoholics, like for alcoholics, when they're like, I see you with your, you know, belligerent kind of clinging on to your ideas and thinking you know best and trying to find another way. At the end of this chapter, it says, you know, once more, like just to absolutely reiterate, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And, you know, over on the next page, when we get to page 45, you know, we're back kind of where we started. It's like if that is where you are, you know, if you have reached this place of hopelessness, where neither you nor anyone else seems to be able to help you, then that is not, you know, the end of the road. That is not hopelessness that you need to drink on. It's like this is it. This is exactly where you need to be. You know, lack of power. That was our dilemma. And that's exactly what this book is going to show us, how to access. Which moves us on to the solution. You know, if it's not a human power, I need a power greater than myself. You know, and a spiritual experience. People were talking about spiritual experience. They were talking about finding a higher power. I was reading it in this book, and I didn't know what anyone was talking about, really. I had no idea like what it was that people were wanting me to kind of grasp onto. Like I kind of wanted something more tangible. Something I could like see and understand. I really thought I needed something like brain surgery or pharmaceuticals that come in a nice box that I can kind of say, yeah, look at that. That is the type of solution that I guess I was looking for, really. And what are you asking me to put my trust in? And on page 44, where they're starting to move us into the solution now in this chapter on We Agnostics, again, it's like alcoholics talking to other alcoholics. Towards the end of the second paragraph, they said, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And it's like, ain't that the truth? And they said, but don't worry, like, about half of our original fellowship, about half of the founding 100 were exactly of that type. Like, you're in good company. You don't need to know what this is. You don't need to like understand anything. Like, we're going to show you actions of how to get it. And so, as much as I need to know about step two, over on page 47, it's a simple question. At the start of the second paragraph, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And, and God, I mean, I was less than a week sober, I think, when I took this step, and still no idea what anyone was really talking about. But I came to believe that my sponsor could restore me to sanity. I believed that she had my problem. I believed that, exactly like Bill and Ebby, somehow, despite having my problem, she was content, and she was peaceful, and she had something in her that I wanted, and I trusted her, and I said, I'm going to do what you suggest. But just before we can access that power, like, it introduces us to the fact that actually there's a lot of me in the way of me and that power. And this spiritual sickness, which is this restlessness, that drives this restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness, on page 55, and I really love this paragraph, on this the second full paragraph on page 55, where it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So I don't need to go like searching frantically, or reading loads of books, or trying to find something alien and external to me. Like, there is something in me and in all of us already, but I can't access it. It goes on, it may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. Like, so I just need to go, I need to clear out that stuff that is obscuring me, that is blocking me off from that power that is already there. And that is what the rest of the steps are about, So when I get to step three, it's asking me, am I willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him? Well, I didn't understand much at the beginning, but I became very willing to turn my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions, over to the steps. And I am gonna give all of that to the steps. I'm gonna follow direction, and I am gonna rigorously, seek to get rid of those things that have made my head so intolerable, such a painful place to live, that going back to the drink, in spite of what I want, in spite of what I think, is just the only option, for me. And I'll just kind of go back to and finish on, there is a solution, page 25, because it sums this up so brilliantly. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. By going through the steps, this is what is guaranteed. This is what is written in step 12. On the beginning of the next paragraph, if you were as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution, you know. And I had got to that point where I was out of ideas, I had no plan left, and that seemed like a terrible thing. But what it meant was I was willing to throw myself into the steps, take direction, stop arguing, stop resisting, and accept spiritual help, so that, as it says at the bottom of this page, I didn't need to kind of go on blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation as best I could, you know. And my situation is so far removed from that, you know. Now it is not just tolerable, it is completely wonderful, in that, yeah. And I don't need to take a drink, you know, a day at a time, as long as I carry on with the action outlined in this book. And I'll leave it there.